Welcome back to the Warren County Radio Bible School, and this morning we use our special feature, or we use this time for our special feature, wherein we read from the Rock Cliff Review. And that is the bulletin that is handed out to those who attend Sunday morning services with us at the meeting house there at Rock Cliff. And this particular Sunday, the bulletin article is called Comfort Ye, Comfort Ye. That comes from Isaiah chapter 40. And this bulletin article is in essence a summary of the sermon that was preached there that morning. Now here's how the article goes. The opening lines of Isaiah 40 are so beautiful that Handel set them to music and put them at the beginning of his Messiah oratorio. They mark a great division in this prophetic book. A coincidence in the chapter divisions is one of the reasons the book of Isaiah has been called the Little Bible. There are 39 books in the Old Testament and 27 books in the New. So also, in Isaiah, the first 39 chapters can be called the chapters of woe, and the last 27 the chapters of comfort. The word woe is used 19 times in the first 39 chapters, but only twice in the last 27. In contrast, the word comfort is used 16 times in the last 27 chapters of Isaiah, but only twice in the first 39. In the first 39 chapters of Isaiah's prophecies, they are given against the background of the contemporary threat of Assyria, but they end with Isaiah telling Hezekiah that his sons and Jerusalem's riches will be carried away into Babylon. It would be 100 years until this prophecy was fulfilled. The last 27 books read as sermons sent into the future to the captives in Babylon and written for their comfort. This section begins, comfort ye my people, Isaiah 40 and verse 1. God had addressed my people as the book begins, saying, Israel doth not know, my people doth not consider. Ah, sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity. They have provoked the Holy One of Israel to anger. Isaiah chapter 1, verses 3 through 4. Hence the prophecies of woes. But now God tells Isaiah to comfort them. The theme of comfort continues with the second verse. Speak ye comfortably to Jerusalem, Isaiah 40 and verse 2. Those in the captivity would read these words when their earthly Jerusalem lay abandoned and in destruction far away. This Jerusalem was not that physical city, but the spiritual Jerusalem that was then in captivity. Isaiah had promised that Zion would be redeemed, that it would be called the City of Righteousness, the faithful city, Isaiah chapter 1, verses 25 through 27, and that out of Zion would go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem, Isaiah chapter 2 and verse 3. The prophet is told to cry unto her, Isaiah 40 and verse 2. This was not a cry of tears. This is the sermon proclaimed to those assembled to hear. Isaiah's message, his cry, would be threefold: that her warfare is accomplished, that her iniquity is pardoned, for she hath received of the Lord's hand double for all her sins, Isaiah 40 and verse 2. The word warfare brings to mind their hardships. I'm reminded of Paul's instructions to Timothy: thou therefore endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ, 2 Timothy 2 and verse 3. However, there's another meaning of the word twice. Job, in Job chapter 7 and verse 1, in Job 14:14, and once Daniel, in Daniel chapter 10 and verse 1, used this word, and it was translated the appointed time. The time for woe has ended. The time for comfort has begun. Some have suggested that this may also be that time for earthly Israel has ended, and the time for spiritual Israel has begun. And you might want to consider Galatians 6 and verse 16. And so that's the word hardness. But then we read that her iniquity is pardoned. And that may set us up for the meaning of she hath received of the Lord's hand double for all her sins. While double may emphasize the fact that the judgment on Jerusalem has been assuredly sufficient, it may refer to the abundant blessings that come with pardon. Such is the intriguing ambiguity often confronted in these prophecies that lead us to think deeply into their possible meanings. The remaining chapters may be divided into three sections of nine chapters each. These sections are variously described by the commentators. Keying off the word comfort, it is suggested that these sections may be the reasons for comfort, which lie in the nature of God, the person of comfort, who is the Messiah to come, and the means of comfort, which includes their need for obedience. Another suggestion is that this may be divided as her welfare is accomplished, chapters 40 through 48. Her iniquity is pardoned, chapters 49 through 57. And she hath received double, chapters 58 through 66. Isaiah's prophecies are threefold. He speaks of contemporary events associated with Assyria, and then of future events concerning Babylon. But there is more. Isaiah anticipates events and teachings in the New Testament. There are 70 quotations or allusions from Isaiah in the New Testament, more than from any other Old Testament book, except the Psalms. Truly, Isaiah is a beautiful book and full of comfort. Well, that's the reading from the Rockcliffe Review. We read from the Rockcliffe Review because the Warren County Radio Bible School is brought to you by the Church of Christ at Rockcliffe. Our meeting house is located between McMinnville and Biola at the foot of Ben Lowen, just across from Mount Zion Road. We have Sunday Bible study at 9 a.m., followed by worship at 10 a.m., Sunday evening worship at 6 p.m., and Wednesday evening Bible study at 7 p.m. All are welcome to all of our assemblies. I am Bill Boyd, the preacher at Rockcliffe, and the superintendent of this radio Bible school. And as we turn to our class studies, our class lessons, we're looking at an old Sunday school lesson on the Ten Commandments, written by E.A. Elam for the Sunday schools of August the 22nd, 1926. And we're looking at that first great commandment that says, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." Let me read this to you from Elam's notes. Idolatry, in any form, is a great sin. Covetousness is idolatry. Colossians chapter 3 and verse 5. We read in Matthew 6 and verse 24, "No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other." Ye cannot serve God and mammon. We read in 1 Timothy 6 and verse 10, "For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, which some, reaching after, have been led astray from the faith and have pierced themselves through with many sorrows. When one sets his heart on becoming rich, he should remember that at the same time, he is becoming an idolater. Not that every rich man or everyone who makes money is an idolater, but they that are minded to be rich fall into temptation and a snare and many foolish and hurtful lusts, such as drown men in destruction and perdition. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 9. When one violates one principle of Christianity, does anything God forbids, or leaves undone anything God commands for the sake of money, he is covetous, and therefore an idolater. Some are lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, 2 Timothy 3 and verse 4. The love of pleasure is another form of idolatry. This being true, the present generation is almost a generation of idolaters. Whatever one loves more than he loves God is virtually an idol to him. God must have the whole heart. Idolatry is forbidden because there's only one God, and he must be loved supremely and worshipped truly. Matthew 4 and verse 10. Thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and him only shalt thou serve, is what Jesus said to Satan when he was tempted. Now let me read this to you. Exodus chapter 19, verse 4 through 6. We'll look at this second commandment. Thou shalt not make unto thee a graven image, nor any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow thyself to them, nor serve them, for I am Jehovah thy God, and I am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children, upon the third and upon the fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing loving kindness unto thousands of them that love me, and keep my commandments. They saw no manner or form when God spoke to them in Horeb out of the midst of the fire, and they must not corrupt themselves by making a graven image in the form of any figure, male or female, or the likeness of any beast, bird, or creeping thing, or fish. Neither should they worship the sun and the moon and the stars. The Egyptians worshiped these. In short, oxen, heifers, sheep, goats, lions, dogs, monkeys, and cats, the ibis, the crane, and the hawk, the crocodile, serpents, frogs and flies, and the beetle, the Nile and its fish, the sun and moon and planets and stars, fire, light, air, darkness, and night were all objects of Egyptian idolatry, and all included in this very circumstantial prohibition is detailed in Deuteronomy chapter 4, verses 15 through 20, and very forcibly in the general terms of the text. Now that is from the commentary written by Adam Clark. The reason given why man must not worship anything else is God is a jealous God. He visits the iniquity of the fathers upon the children, upon the third and fourth generation of them that hate him, because the children are influenced by their fathers to continue in idolatry, and because they inherit evil tendencies from their fathers, and because they suffer the consequences of their father's sins. It is a fearful thing to hate God, to live in disobedience to him, is to hate him. He that gathers not with Jesus scatters abroad. He that is not actively engaged in the service of Jesus is against him. But on the other hand, God is a God of great mercy. and he shows his loving kindness to 1,000 generations of them that love him and keep his commandments.